Hello, hello, beloved listeners, and welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, thrilled and delighted to be your host again today. Yes, we're at it again. What are we doing? We're bringing value to you to help out along the way, because, you know, there's always stuff that we've got to handle. We came here to the School of Life, and we're learning, and so what can we do? Well, let's bring some wonderful guests in to help make things easier and better. You know, I have a mission. Daily I pray, Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Yeah, we're going for it. And that, of course, that's a big goal. Might as well, you know, we get to make the goal as big as we want because we're children of the glorious Father that sends us energy every moment of every day to create what we want. And, oh boy, you're in for a treat today with a wonderful guest. And before we get started, the invitation, our show is sponsored by AdvancedLiving.com. So when you get a moment, go to AdvancedLiving.com, check out the comfort technology. It's a Clark Kent clock with superpowers. You plug in this small digital clock, but it creates a harmonized energy like having the Dalai Lama show up and meditate in your room. Great for better sleep, great for reducing stress, great for dealing with all the electropollution that comes from all the electronics around us today. Blah. So anyway, check out AdvancedLiving.com. And now, What if the question was, hi, can Jesus come out and play today? Well, guess what? The answer is yes. And who's going to help us with that? An amazing, amazing woman, Alexis Eldridge. You will just be surprised and delighted by her work. She has written a book called Conversations with Jesus, and this spans many years of her going into a place of deep meditation, of communing, and coming out with some amazing, amazing things to share. Now, she was born and raised in New York. She has a bachelor's degree in psychology from Hunter College there in New York, a master's in education from Brooklyn College, worked for many years as a guidance counselor for special education children in elementary schools in Brooklyn and Manhattan. Boy, there's a challenge for you, I'll tell you. And she's also a psychotherapist in private practice. She now works as an energy healer, an intuitive, and an artist. And her evolving spiritual path led to moves to Virginia and now, of all wonderful places, Ashland, Oregon. So we're going to invite on Alexis Eldridge and find out about Conversations with Jesus. Hello, Alexis.
Hi, thank you for that beautiful invitation.
Oh, my pleasure. This is just so exciting. We're all here. thrilled and delighted because it's important for us. So much of our lives we've lived feeling separate from God, separate from those that ways of connecting. And so now here you are bringing out this stuff, and you've spent many years with this. And I guess, you know, immediately when someone would say, oh, I'm having conversations with Jesus, it's like they're going to probably want to go, that's very nice. It, look down at their wrist, and even if there's not a watch there, go, oh my gosh, I'm late for somewhere. Please help me go now. So help me to know, how do you know, and why should people believe that you're talking to Jesus?
Well, if you move to Ashland, they're not going to do that. I think that's why they guided me here.
Yes, in Ashland, it's just fine. They'll go, well, of course, what has he got to say today?
Yeah. But for those who do look at their arm and don't see a watch and say they need to go, why should they believe me? Well, let's take out the word should. I don't like that word. And Jesus doesn't like it either. You know, there's no investment in people believing this. It's an invitation to go beyond what we've been conditioned and programmed to believe, which isn't serving us on such a large level. I mean, there's so much suffering. There's so much darkness. You know, and people pile into churches, you know, expecting something. So why wouldn't they really believe it? If one drops down and gets quiet within themselves, why wouldn't they believe that they could have a relationship with him? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, isn't that why people go to church? And this is a non-denominational book. So Jesus is wanting everyone to know that he belongs to all. But, I mean, just to go back to the people that might not believe, it doesn't even make sense. Isn't that the goal of prayer? Isn't that the goal of sitting in church, to have an intimate relationship? People forget this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the Eucharist about? Isn't that about communion with him? And if we're not going to hear him and feel his love and help him guide us, have him help guide us, what's the point?
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to take the fantasy out of this book, because it's not fantasy. It's real, and it's actually what people want if they drop down and get to their truth. I know that was a mouthful. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. That's important because, as you said to me, the key part is about having this communion that goes beyond a little liquid, a little wafer. From 1,000 Clowns, there's a quote, a little song, a little dance, a little seltzer in your pants, which to me is another form of spirituality in the joy that Jesus speaks to us about. And I'm sensing just so much joy about your time to spend hours and hours receiving this wonderful communion with this holy presence, and then to go through what you had to feel comfortable to share it with us.
Yeah, it's been quite the journey.
Yeah, and maybe you can, you know, share a little bit about that, because sometimes through other people's journeys of communion with Spirit, we can open up a little more ourselves.
Yes. And I believe that's why he asks me to share my intimate life during the conversations, because I represent humanity. You know, my story might be different in certain ways, my gender might be different, you know, my race, but we're all one, and we really do have, you know, the same wants and needs. So he does have me go deep and share some things that were hard for me to share in the conversations. And for the longest time, I didn't talk to anybody about my friendship with him, because being Jewish, it just wasn't heard of. You know, at least back in New York, where I'm from, you know, the Jews I knew didn't want to talk about Jesus. So when he showed up in my artwork, I felt very alone in that, and I made that decision to to keep that symbol and then to start opening myself up to his energy, all new stuff for me. I was still living a conventional lifestyle, you know, as an educator in New York City, and had everything except the 2.5 kids, you know. But I opened up, and as I opened, more things had to fall away, more things. I left my tenured position, I left my long-term safe relationship, you know, I left my father's house, all these archetypal, symbolic things I just felt called to let go of so I can move more and more into my essence so I could hear deeper what I was meant to do, which is the healing work, and that led me to people that believed my experience and supported it, and that encouraged me to believe and deepen my experience. And the way this book came about was so divine. It was so beautiful. You know, it was just like out of a fairy tale. Do you want me to share?
Oh, gosh. No, just tease us like this and let us hang here until we're just kind of coming going, ah! Yes, I got to know.
Okay. Well, I knew I needed to leave New York once I completed healing school. Just knew, and I wasn't sure where that was, and I tried all these different places. And then ended up in Virginia, kicking and screaming. Didn't know why I was there. And then after a year's time of real intense training with the spirit world, after my traditional healing school, I met the publisher, of Conversations with God, a pretty well-known book. And I was thrilled to meet him because I was writing and showed him some stuff and didn't like it. Devastated, and we became acquaintances, and one night over dinner I was sharing just some darkness that I was experiencing, and I mentioned Jesus being my confidant, and he said, "You talk to this guy every day?" And I said, "Yeah, every day." And he's like, "And you're Jewish?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm Jewish." And he's like, "That's your book." He's like, "I met you to encourage you to write Conversations with Jesus." And that was huge for me. I didn't know what to make of that, and I was not ready for that, and or so I thought. And when I left Robert Friedman's house that night, the publisher, I asked Jesus on the way home, I said, "Is this what you want?" And he said, "This is what I want, but it's a huge undertaking, so you got to really want to do it, so think about it, sleep on it." Well, I did for like 3 weeks. And then I committed to it, and that was it.
Wow. And prior to this, you had been having these conversations for a while, or?
Yeah, yeah. But for, you know, these amazing conversations, these mentorship conversations, walking in the woods, learning from him, getting so much. And, yeah, I put the prayer out, you know, how can other people also benefit from this relationship? I can't be the only one, you know. So I did put the prayer out, but I sure as heck didn't know it was going to be in a book form, you know, with this title. And but it makes sense because this way it could hit the most people.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And for a huge portion of the planet, Jesus is a powerful and important figure. So to reach out and do that, I think, is important. And I'm just wondering, anything that came to you about why you being picked to do this?
Well, that's kind of evolved. At first, it was kind of confusing to me, and it's becoming clearer. I, like many other people, have had lifetimes, other incarnations with Jesus. We were different people, and my sense, though, is that I actually also lived during that time where he was Jesus. So we have some soul agreements, and so that's part of it. That's my understanding. Another part of it is I've done a tremendous amount of work to peel away that which is false this lifetime. And I was able, I got to a place where I really am able to hear him acutely and put my own ego stuff aside in a significant way. And so the big message is he wants to be friends with so many people, and he wants to guide many people. He's not looking to put out books with all these people, but he's not wanting to be untouchable. So I'm part of this picture for myriad reasons, and yet the bigger message is he's like, hey, look at me, I'm over here, you know, I can serve, I can help you in ways that people are saying that he's not allowed to, and that's nonsense.
Hmm. Wow. I love it. And now, there was a very first time that there was a conversation or some communion? And
well,
or
you mean going back?
Yeah, I mean, because the reason I bring this up, Alexis, is there's so much content and beauty in your book, and we'll get to more of that as we continue the interview. Part of this to me is here you're bringing this forward and your process and now these conversations. And then the encouragement, of course, is that you're not the only one who can converse with Jesus. That his presence is there for all of us, but we haven't really been taught that there is a connection to this holy presence available to us 24/7.
Right.
And so a little bit of, you know, and especially you, so you're Jewish, okay, so he, you know, not valued, so you didn't grow up in a household that spoke of him in any kind of reverent way, I don't suspect. I didn't. I grew up in a Jewish household, and it was just kind of, he was Jewish, and then he went on and did some other stuff. And that was the end of the conversation. He did some other stuff, huh?
Yeah.
So there, you know, this, he said you saw a symbol that came through in one of your paintings, and then was there just meditation after that, or what did that get you contemplating a relationship with Jesus? How did this evolve?
Okay, well, it's colorful. It's after I welcomed that energy in, and I don't even know if that was conscious, but it was like, okay, I'm not going to smear the oil paint. I'm letting the cross stay in my painting. From that point on, I started feeling his plight. I started writing about him in my poems as if I knew him, never studied him, just felt like he was kindred spirit. He was just coming through. I just let it happen. Bought my first cross. Actually, it was bought for me from another Jewish friend. We were in the St. John Divine in Manhattan around my birthday.
Yeah.
And this beloved friend said, oh, isn't that a beautiful cross? And he bought it for me. It was great. And two Jews buying a cross.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's just... it just yeah,
that's
it's great.
Two and Jews go into a jewelry store and buy a cross.
No, yeah. We were in a church in Manhattan.
Oh, okay.
yeah, the St. John Divine, beautiful church. But so that kept kind of developing. Then the big significant piece here was when I was 33, didn't realize how auspicious that was at the time. I was upstate New York. I had left the New York City lifestyle, and I was in this non-denominational spiritual gathering that a friend brought me to. And the guy, a born-again Christian, was running this guided visualization with the intention to meet our guide. And we all sat there in the dark and the quiet, and he led us to this mountaintop where I was intending on meeting Buddha, because I was deep in Buddhism and loving it, feeling a real resonance, and Jesus was there. And it totally surprised the heck out of me. And I said, "You got the wrong woman, mister. I don't know who you're looking for, but you are not my guide." And he didn't budge. He just kept coming closer and closer. He was this luminous, powerful, gorgeous energy. And he became one with my energy field. We were one. He fused himself with me, and it scared me. And I almost took myself out of the visualization, but I didn't. I hung on. And we were one for a little while, and then he came out of me, and then he was separate. And I was scared. I thought I did something wrong, something erotic. I didn't know what to think. And he looked at me and he said, "I impregnated you with yourself."
Mmm. Wow.
Yeah. So
what does that mean for one to be impregnated with themselves?
I didn't know. I didn't know at the time. I did tell the group, even though I was scared. And the man who was running it, he was so excited. He's like, "That's Jesus for you. He will love you up." I'm quoting him. And I was like, "Okay, I don't really know this guy, but I'll take your word for it." And, you know, a few months passed. I turned 34. I went off to Europe by myself for the first time. And I found myself going to churches and sitting there on bended knee and listening like I never had before, and to him and to Mary, and befriending them. It was like familial, you know, and it was really something, and it just grew from there. It just kept developing. And then once I really let go of the educational gig back in New York City and opened myself up to what was next after prayer and meditation and was in healing school, then Jesus was showing up all the time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. This is pretty exciting to have this time. And if I'm understanding, there's been a number of days. What, have you just gone into this place for hours on end?
This place?
Yeah, of communion with Jesus?
Well, I'm feeling like there's one other thing I need to say.
Sure.
It may or may not answer that question, but...
Oh, that's okay.
For the year before, I was in Virginia for 2 years. The year before I wrote the book, when I didn't know the book was just a concept, right, in the sky.
Yeah.
I was doing communion. Literally, I was doing this Eucharist. I couldn't believe it. It's not like I've ever, you know, been to church. I just found myself every morning drinking a little bit of grape juice, a little piece of bread, and then communing with him. And I thought I was going crazy. I said, "I don't know why I'm doing this, but I'm doing this." And I told one friend of mine, and she said, "You know, they've got wafers you can go buy." And I was thrilled. I didn't even know. You know, I went and I bought these wafers.
Okay.
And every day for like a year I did this. And then, you know, the book happened. So it's been all these different elements. And I think it's important to mention that, because he kind of nudged me to mention that. And it's because he will enter people's lives in the way that they can handle it and receive it and see it. So it could be anything. It could be anything, and it's his little calling card, you know? And if people are open to it, it's just the majesty of it is huge.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so
yeah.
So one doesn't have to sit in meditation, just to go back to your question, for hours. I mean, we've sat and talk, and we do healings, and we have deliberate conscious time when we write together, and yet it's not one way, I think is the point.
Ah, good. Okay. Well, geez, this sounds like high-level accessibility.
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, okay. Boy, that helps. I was hoping I didn't have to stand on my head in the corner and hum to be able to do this stuff, because
nope.
I keep falling over when I do that. And so, wow, I love this. And now I'm just wondering, Jesus, of course, was a Jew, and then we've got Christianity that began. In your conversations, did he ever mention anything about, was he trying to inspire another religion, or?
He says in the book that he was not, that he was trying to make Judaism anew. Not even new, but anew, like all the greatness that it was, and just add some, you know, broaden it, and remind people of what it was meant to be. You know, he saw things happening that he didn't believe in. And it wasn't everybody, you know, that was, astray. But he wanted to bring some more jewels to it, and he wanted to, you know, purify it and enlighten it and, you know, bring more light to it, you know?
Sure.
Add to it. No, he's not about the separation. He's not happy about that, and he puts that in the book.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
That's good to know. You'd mentioned, of course, some things with Buddhism and then some feelings of connecting with Jesus in other lifetimes. So that leads us to the topic of reincarnation. And I'd be wondering what in your conversations with Jesus comes up about reincarnation.
Well, I was really surprised, but he's got real belief in the value of it. And that's in the book as well. He talks about previous incarnations he had that helped him evolve to the being that he was, you know, as Jesus, that he needed lifetime after lifetime to become that amazing being of Jesus, needed to learn lessons. And then he talks about the benefit of knowing certain lifetimes that we've had to understand why certain things are happening in our present incarnations, that it could help us move away from suffering if we have understanding about certain things we've lived through, certain things we need to resolve now.
Hmm, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there any particular pieces of advice that come up frequently?
Well, you know, everybody's got their own stories. You know, everybody's either reliving something that they need to, you know, become whole around, you know, or meeting people that they need to resolve things around. It's more just being open to it, not poo-pooing it, not being afraid of it, but knowing that it's a blessing if we can get, like, an insight into those lifetimes.
Mm.
And the power of quietude, you know, and meditation, and inviting him in or other spirit guides to help us get clear about the information that's coming forth.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's important. And then I'm just wondering, for me, I was raised in a Jewish home. Previously, I had married a Roman Catholic woman and spent some years together before our divorce. And both of the religions, between my experience of Judaism and some of the Catholic stuff, was they could have a contest on who could do the best job of motivating children with guilt and shame. And I don't know if they're the world champions, but I found a bunch of that in my experience. And I'm just kind of wondering about, with Jesus and your time with him, about things about judgment, unconditional love.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. And I hear the pain when you bring that up. And that pain is illustrative of so many people's pain. And Jesus, in my experience of him and what we have in the book, is so against judgment, so not into judgment, and so, easy and forgiving. And sometimes when I do things, I sit there with, like, biting my lip, saying, oh, God, I ought not have done that. And he's got this beautiful way of making that okay. Not saying, yeah, do it again, but the forgiveness that he offers and the understanding. And in the book, he talks about parenting and, the challenges with it, and he offers advice to parents. It's beautiful what he offers to parents, bringing up children and all the guidance and information in the book around that. And I talk about, of course, my experience being shamed as a youth, and so we go into that in the book, and the importance of letting that go and healing through that, and, just not accepting the afflictions, from our from our folks and our teachers. And we go into that in book two. So that's going to be coming out, in a few months, or we go deeper into that. We actually go deeper into a bunch of the topics in book two, which I'm working on presently.
Ah, hooray.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so this Conversations with Jesus is the first book in this. It will likely end up being a series, because it appears like you're smart enough to want to continue having ongoing conversation with this divine presence of Jesus the Christ.
Well, it's his call. He asked me to start book two on Thanksgiving Day. And I agreed. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you didn't do the wishbone thing together, did you?
No, he just smells the food. He doesn't eat it.
Okay. Just
check. I see him taking a whiff of some of my food sometimes, and the other spirits too. But we won't get into that.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's so much more available to us that you're discovering than what is in our three-dimensional world.
Right.
I'm particularly grateful for this part about this non-judgment and this forgiveness coming through. I think that's just such a wonderful, wonderful and important thing. So the idea then in your conversations there isn't, can you say something about this original sin thing?
Original sin. Now, that's some kind of Catholic Christian term. I'm not even sure what that means.
Okay. Well, it may not have come up in the conversation. It just sort of comes in a lot of the Christian things of that every child is born as a sinner.
Oh, wow. That's a big...
Yeah, and of course, through my studies, someone pointed out that if you trace the word sin back far enough, I didn't trace this, but if this is accurate, they said that it was actually a term related to archery, and it meant missing the mark if you didn't hit the bullseye.
That's very similar to the way he talks about sin in the book. And he talks about it in a way where we're moving away from our truth. We're divine. We're divinity. He talks about that throughout the book. And how empowering it is to remember that. And he wants to get back to realizing we're divinity also. And when we do things that are not in line with that, how that could be seen as a sin. But because we're, betraying our truth. But that's not with judgment. He's not saying that with judgment. He's just saying, yeah, you're missing the mark. Get back on track.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, and to me, one of the important things in this place of judgment had to do with if you mess up, then there will be some sort of withholding. withholding of love, family, friends, community, or in a spiritual level, withholding of love, meaning instead of being able to go to heaven or to be in the presence of God, you might either go there to limbo, which is kind of like, well, you just got to wait and do nothing. You're not going to be tortured, but you're not going to have any fun. Or the other one is the hell thing where it's like torture forever.
Yeah, he sure doesn't say that in the book or in my relationship with him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. This could be some happy reading, folks.
It's truthful. You know, I know that sounds biased, but that's my understanding that this is his truth.
Yeah. And I guess to me, one of the things, some of my teachers, they've got a weird sense of humor, as you could tell, and they talk about so much not necessarily finding an ultimate truth as much as making some assumptions and then carrying them out in our daily interactions with ourselves, with each other, with spirit, and seeing, as it's spoken of biblically, what are the fruits of that labor, of those assumptions.
Mm.
So is it so important that we be right, or just give something a try and then check it out? How do we do? Are we loving ourselves, loving each other? So that's a thought. I don't know if you've ever had that come up.
Well, it sounds like you're talking about the language I would use that is familiar to me and comfortable for me is giving something a voice. Like, let's try that on. Let's give that a voice.
Okay.
You know, and as long as that's not hateful or hurting yourself or someone else, give it a voice. Give it a try. Yeah. And then, you know, revisit. You know, be zen with it. You know, it's all wet clay. You know, I mean, that could be part of the playground, you know? And also, I think we get to a point where we can hear acutely, and there's a little less of that. You know, there's a little less finger painting, and there's more of, you know, using a little bit more permanent ink. You know? Hopefully these metaphors make sense.
Yeah, in other words, sometimes we want to experiment, and if things are working out, then we can make a deeper commitment.
Yeah. You know, honor the whole of us, and also know that according to Jesus and what we put in the book, that there is the highest good. So what's the highest good in this situation? You know, for everybody, for everything. You know, and kind of attuning to that and being able to hear that. And it's not always what we prefer. I didn't know a darn person in Ashland. It wasn't like, oh yeah, I want to move there. But, you know, I attuned myself and made the choice to hear what was in the highest good, and that's what I heard. And I chose to go that route. So, you know, what I'm saying is we can kind of dance with things. We could, you know, use the finger paints. They're not as permanent, but then we might want to really sign on and make certain choices of that we hear are really the right ones for that time and act on them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's different levels of commitment, you know, and that affects things.
Yeah, and I'm curious too, because I still have more of your book to read. I scan through different parts of it, and have you had in some of your conversations things that relate to like self-care for health, taking care of yourself? I don't know how that comes up.
Yeah, it was interesting that chapter. I call them chapters, but they're daily entries. So like a particular day, we did talk about that. Jesus asked me to go into some detail about how I've come to this point of caring for myself, because it's been quite the journey. You know, it's like magazines say this is what you should do, and books say that's what you should do. You know, we've got all these health gurus, you know, and they're, you know, some of it's wonderful, and yet intuitively learning what suits us is also so important. And I've gotten to that place, and I still work with that. You know, I still have some of those programs and tapes on my head saying, do this, don't do that. But I've learned to dismantle a lot of that and moved into the space of intuitiveness of, like, you know, what should I eat, and, you know, how often do I exercise, and so that's in the book. And he's an advocate of doing things intuitively, and that doesn't exclude sitting with our guides and getting, you know, information from them around things like self-care. Why not? Why should we not talk about self-care with our guides? Do we only go to them with conventional spiritual issues? No. No. Everything. They're here with us all the time.
Well, that's exciting that in your conversations that it's not, oh, I can only listen to Jesus, and everything else is Satan or potentially harmful to me.
Yeah, that's quite far from the truth that I understand.
Yeah. Okay. So, and I'm wondering about there being conversations about this this divinity that is pervasive, and your Jesus and you are having conversations. So, as a spokesperson, and talking about this oneness, so that it's not just, oh, here's this one place that I can drink from the well of Jesus, but there's a rampant divinity, possibly.
Yes, according to him, absolutely. And that's why early on in the book he wanted it to be known that he is God-like and not God, and that we are God-like, and that he, like Buddha, is illustrative of our potential and wanting to guide us to our potential. And, divinity abounds. It's in us, around us, uniting us.
Wow. That's wonderful to have that. And I guess people can, of course, learn more going to the website conversationswithjesus.com. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, and I can get your book. And the one I have, I love the pages appear to be rough cut.
Yes.
Was that done deliberately?
Yes.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
How fun.
Yeah, it's called classic binding.
Classic.
Yes.
Okay.
It feels very scripture-like. I love it. Contemporary scripture.
Yeah. Well, to me, when I look at that, it's like the idea of the difference between something that is totally precise and where there's a little more adventure and diversity. And from that adventure and diversity, it's all encased in the oneness of the book.
That's beautiful, Ken. Thank you.
You're welcome. So you
feel
can
perfect.
Feel free to use that as a
all right.
as a way for people to further enjoy that unique aspect of the book.
Yeah.
How sweet. And I'm just kind of curious because, of course, family is important. Now that you've done this, do you still get to get invited to back to New York for Seders, or do they talk to you, or how's this going?
You know, my Jewish mother read the book.
Ah.
And my father, you know, has passed on, which I believe is completely connected to me being able to do the book. So just briefly, my mother read the book, and now that she's read it, she said, now I understand who you are and all the things you've been saying. And she's like, this Jesus guy seems great. You know, she's like, he seems like a neighbor, like, you know, like a loving parent. I mean, it's really interesting how she's turned around and she's told everybody. So she's really on board with it. So, yes, she'll invite me to the next Seder. And my dad passed 5 years ago. And, you know, we had kind of a tenuous relationship. And when I was standing at his gravesite, it was a snowstorm in New York, and it was a huge reception. And, however, one person was allowed to go up to the actual lowering of the casket, and it was me, and I went up there. And I actually heard my father. He said, you know, I'll be able to serve you much more now. My fatherhood peaked. He's like, I couldn't do any more for you on the earthly plane. And he's like, I could do much more for you now. And I'll tell you, he sure as heck did. I mean, him passing on gave me the time and the space to leave my job in New York City, to go to healing school, and to take the time to sit and sequester and write this book.
Wow. I'll bet Dad's got a big grin on his face.
Yeah.
In that spiritual realm, for being able to support that to happen and seeing you carry forward with this part of your life.
Yeah.
Wow. And there's so much. We could just have like about 5 or 6 radio interviews here with you, you know, just because the questions keep coming. I don't know if you've done anything or heard anything. The years from his childhood to when he started his ministry at age 30, was he just kind of making a lot of furniture like his dad did? Or?
You know, he says that when he was 13, that's really when he started teaching.
Hmm.
You know, at this point, I don't remember if that was in book one or book two. I might be telling you something that isn't even in the first book, and, like, I'm giving away secrets.
Oh, my gosh. Sneak preview, folks.
Yeah. I mean, the book we're talking about just came out, so it's still hot off the press. But I wrote the second one, like, while the first one was just coming out. So it's like, but actually, I know that in book two, we go into places he went when he was younger.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there was, in some of my exploration, rumors that he spent many years in what would be called mystery schools or different trainings to reach some of the depth of his spiritual abilities. And,
you know, people can sit in quietude and talk to him and ask him. You know, but it's like, you know, people can talk and gossip. You know, he talks about gossip in the book. He's so not into gossip, and he says it's such a waste of our vital forces, you know. But, I mean, people can do that. They could kibitz, you know. They could schmooze around. Or they could really get serious about their lives. And part of that is getting quiet and having conversations with their own soul and their spirit and the spirit realm and finding out the truth. You know, energy is not limitless. You know, I mean, in our physical human bodies, we have a certain amount for every day, and how are we going to spend that? Gossiping? You know, talking about stuff and not getting answers, or getting quiet and listening?
Yeah, well, that's certainly important. And I guess, is there anything about that's the advice, how do we deal with, for instance, the rift between Catholics and Jews would be one example. It's in our country. I remember angry people going, well, you killed our Lord and Savior.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's in there in the book. We address that in two different conversations. He talks about that specifically. He says that Judas did not betray him. He says that he and Judas had a plan. And it was for Jesus to die so he could come back and do his work in a more pervasive, global, huge way that was asked of him. So, you know, Judas happened to be Jewish. It could have been anybody, any religion. But, of course, people didn't see it that way, and they still might not see it like that. But this is beyond religion. This was a huge need. And, you know, Jesus came back, and the world is still so dark. So what if he didn't? Can you imagine the state of affairs then? You know, if he lived out his human life like, you know, a regular being. So it goes deeper in the book.
Yeah. And does some of this address, because a typical religious thing, whether it's Jesus or some other worshipped being, seems to be that the only way to God is by worshiping, whether it's Jesus or Buddha or Muhammad, versus looking at them kind of as reverent messengers. And I'm not sure if that comes up in any of your conversations.
The only way to God is through one of his messengers or her messengers?
Uh-huh, yeah.
I would say that's probably not the way. I don't know if we had a specific conversation about that, but the fact that Jesus says we're all God-like, we're all chips off the creator's block, we're all part of it. We look around and we see God in each other's eyes, each other's faces,
okay.
In the trees, in the ocean, everywhere.
Wow. Well, this is good news. I mean, I know if I'm going to go to whatever, San Diego or Ashland or New York or anything, I have to go to some company and buy a ticket and get on their conveyance to get there. But from what you're saying and with your conversations with Jesus, we don't have to go through any intermediary to have this direct connection.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, that's handy and basically easier on the budget, too.
Yeah, and you don't have to leave your house.
Yeah. Yeah, he's everywhere.
I
love it.
You know, the creators are everywhere.
Yeah.
You know? So is he. Yeah.
Right. That's pretty fun. No wonder you're darn happy about all this that you're doing.
It's probably the most magnificent thing I could be doing, you know. And I put those prayers out, though. I put those precise prayers out when I walked through the woods. And I knew guidance counseling wasn't it, and doing my art full-time wasn't it, and being a psychotherapist full-time wasn't it. I put the prayers out and said, what is the most meaningful thing on the planet I could be doing? And this was not the picture I got, but it is.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I think this is great, and I'm just encourage our listeners to check out your book, learn, and of course, take time to just be inspired by what they're hearing today to do their own communion with Jesus or Buddha or Krishna, whatever, so that you have time to. There's a Sufi poem that I really love. It says, "How beautiful this moment to share the holy presence with you. I open my heart to this moment and let the light of my love shine through."
Thank you.
You're welcome. Is there We've got about a minute left. Is there a quick thing you might want to add at the end?
Yeah, I misspoke. When I said I put those prayers out about the most meaningful thing I could do, and I said I saw it, but it wasn't it. What I meant was I had in mind something. But what was actually it materialized was much more than I imagined.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, it was
okay.
Greater than I could have imagined.
Well, all right. Folks, guess what? If Alexis can do it, so can you. So begin to commune and get her book at conversationswithjesus.com and start your own journey. Alexis, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
What a treat. Many blessings to you. And to you, Alexis, and to my beloved listeners, until we meet again, God bless and goodbye for now.
Let go.